Thank you, Rob, for the introduction. I'd like to begin by first thanking Matt, who invited me to visit Perimeter, and for several discussions on the subject. Also, thanks to Rob and Ellie for the invitation to give the seminar. So the talk focuses a fair bit on pilot wave theory, but I think it's best to begin from a question that is not specific to pilot wave theory or to quantum foundations as such. And I think I can pose a problem in a single sentence, is that in quantum gravity, the solutions to the Wheeler-DeWitt equation are in general non-normalizable. A particular example of this is the Kodama state, which is an exact solution, the only known exact solution to the equation. And it satisfies the rest of the physical constraints, but it is non-normalizable. The traditional approach in quantum gravity to address this issue has been to redefine the inner product so as to make this state normalizable. However, there are a few challenges in actually implementing that. So firstly, the closed form expression of such an inner product is still unknown, although there has been progress made in getting closer to this. So this is a technical and conceptual difficulty. And secondly, even if we eventually get a closed form expression, this still does not really make clear like how to interpret the quantum state of the entire universe. So one may ask if quantum foundations community can inform the discussion. And it appears to me that because we have a clear understanding of the interpretation of the quantum state, namely the psi epistemic versus psi ontic, there is a clear direct impact that such a discussion can have on the second challenge. But I will further argue in this talk that a clear understanding of the role of the quantum state affects the very approach that we take to resolve this problem. So now let me shift to a foundational perspective. Even if we don't find this question, let's say, interesting, there's a purely foundational reason we may be interested in non-normalizable quantum state. And it has to do with the conceptual structure of pilot wave theory. So pilot wave theory, it has two dynamical equations. There is a quantum state, which is evolving. And there's Schrodinger equation, which determines the evolution. And there is also a guidance equation for the evolution of the particle position. And the quantum state is interpreted as a field which determines the evolution of the particle. So I can only show like a three-dimensional electromagnetic field, but the field that is determined by the quantum state is in configuration space, it is non-local, and it has these kind of counterintuitive properties. So this dynamics was proposed by de Broglie in 1927, and he called it pilot wave theory. He considered these two equations as laws of nature.
Missing a derivative, by the way. Time derivative.
Oh, yes, yes. Correct. There is a partial derivative with respect to time in the first equation. Sorry about that. So he considered the Schrodinger equation and the guidance equation as laws of nature. And of course, to supply the initial conditions for these laws, we need a initial quantum state, and we also need the initial position of the particle. So this theory was rediscovered in a different form by Bohm in 1950s. And to be careful here, he actually gave a bit of a different formulation here. So according to him, the guidance equation is velocity, not velocity based, but acceleration based. And introduced a potential in addition to a quantum potential, which is a correction to the classical potential. And for him, one needs to supply not only the initial position, but also the initial velocity as for the dynamics. So just to clarify, the dynamics I'm going to focus on in this talk is the pilot wave theory originally given by de Broglie. One of the things that Bohm clearly brought out in his papers is that the two initial conditions in the theory, the position, the initial position of the particle, and the initial quantum state, they are logically independent. So what it means is that if there is a quantum state, let's say Gaussian, then the particle can begin from here or from a different position. They're two separate initial conditions. And if you take an ensemble of systems, each prepared in the same quantum state, then the initial distribution of the positions can be different from mod psi square. So this is something that he clearly mentioned. And this was also, by the way, brought out by Pauli as a criticism of pilot wave theory, that you need to assume a particular initial distribution for an ensemble to get quantum mechanics, whereas there is no logical reason why one should do that. So Bohm addressed this issue by giving a stochastic addition to the velocity field. So he proposed that the velocity field is modified by some fluid fluctuations or some random collisions. And he added a stochastic term in the dynamics. And he was able to show that for a certain number of limited cases, an initial arbitrary distribution goes over to the mod psi square distribution. But I think a more convincing answer to this was given by Valentin in 1990s, where he showed that the original dynamics is sufficient for an arbitrary initial distribution to relax to the quantum distribution at a coarse-grained level. So this has been, over the years, verified in a number of experiments, a number of simulations, numerical simulations. And this is, for example, a recent plot which shows like a partial relaxation. And workers have studied the time scale of relaxation, under which conditions it gets delayed, and so on, the mechanism of relaxation. But one conceptual point about this has not been well appreciated or been largely overlooked, is that if the quantum state is indeed a physical field and logically independent of the density, then why bother normalizing the quantum state? The object to normalize would be the initial density of configurations. So if you take the position that psi is a physical field, a non-local physical field, seriously, then we should, in principle, also allow non-knowledgeable quantum states in pilot wave theory. And here we have a connection between the external and the internal motivations we can see from outside foundations and from the structure of pilot wave theory. And in this talk, I'm going to focus on my results from the foundational perspective. So to better understand these non-normalizable quantum states in pilot wave theory, I have studied the non-normalizable states of the harmonic oscillator. I chose the harmonic oscillator because this system is fairly ubiquitous in nature. We can find it in, for example, in condensed matter, in scalar field, in electromagnetism. And there are many systems which obey a harmonic oscillator kind of equation at a certain level of approximation. So it's a good, a useful starting point for such a discussion. Yes.
Before you continue, I just want to ask, is the idea that your pilot wave will be non-normalized, but you will still have equilibration in the sense that the density of particle positions will converge to a normalized version of your pilot wave squared on a coarse-grained level? Is that the idea? You'll still have that sort of convergence?
So the idea is slightly different. So the idea is not that the quantum state is not normalized, but that it cannot be normalized. So for example, a quantum state can be divergent at infinity. Let's say goes e to the power x square. So then it would not be normalizable in the standard inner product.
So you couldn't even extract a distribution over positions from it because it's not normalizable.
Yes.
Okay, so then you wouldn't have anything like an equilibration result to prove, because you would know that your density could never converge to something like psi squared.
Wait and see.
Yeah, so that appears prima facie to be the reasonable position to take, but I will show that like there would be a equilibrium density, for such quantum states as well. So, it would not be unique, and I'll go into the details later.
Okay. I see, but the main reason you told us about that equilibration is just to emphasize the point that the pilot wave and the distribution of the positions are distinct.
They're distinct.
And okay.
Yeah.
Good.
So if it is not normalized, we can think of it in this way. But if it is normalizable but not normalized, so the pilot wave velocity field does not depend on the absolute magnitude of the quantum state, so it would not change any of the dynamics and the results. But if it is not normalizable, it's a different quantum state, which is not allowed in quantum mechanics, and that would correspond to a different velocity field. So these are new physical fields for the configurations, which have not been considered previously.
So you're really describing a foil to operational quantum theory, because it's going to make different predictions from what quantum theory makes.
Yes, hopefully. Hopefully it leads to an experimental prediction which can be tested. And I would get into more details of that in the applications of, yeah.
Thank you.
But it is, yeah, thank you. So the harmonic oscillator, just the textbook energy levels we describe here, but notice that the discrete energy levels, this structure, it arises out of the normalizability constraint. So let's look at the general solution for the harmonic oscillator. So you have this equation, the time-independent Schrodinger equation, where I've introduced these dimensionless variables. And it is traditional to use the following ansatz by studying the asymptotic property of the differential equation. And once you substitute this, then what you get is the Hamay differential equation. So the general solution for psi can be expressed in the following form. It has two independent solutions, and phi naught and phi 1. And phi naught and phi 1 are in turn defined in terms of these functions, where m is the confluent hypergeometric function of the first kind. It's an infinite series. And it also involves a Pochhammer symbol, which is defined in terms of the gamma function here. So how does this relate back to the discrete energy levels? So the quantum states that are allowed by quantum mechanics are the following. So if you take like K, that is an energy equal to twice of energy by H cross, as 2n plus 1, so you're fixing K to be an integer of the following form, 2n plus 1. And if n is even, then the quantum state allowed by quantum mechanics is phi naught. And if n is odd, then it is phi 1. So phi naught is normalizable if k is equal to 2n plus 1. But phi 1 is not normalizable in that case. Whereas phi 1 is normalizable if n is equal, if n is odd. And for such energies, phi naught is not normalizable. In general, if you consider an energy in between the energy states that allowed by quantum mechanics, then both phi naught and phi 1 are non-normalizable. If you consider an energy that is negative, then all the for any negative energy, both phi naught and phi 1 are not normalizable. So I can express the general solution in this form, but I've made use of the fact that the velocity field does not depend on the absolute magnitude of the quantum state and on the absolute global phase of the quantum state, and therefore eliminate two real parameters. So we can express the quantum state in terms of theta and phi. And if we calculate what the velocity field of that is being generated by such a quantum state, then one can show that this is the following form. So notice here that this velocity field, it is going to tend to zero at places where mod psi squared is divergent. So I've plotted the velocity field and the mod psi squared for a particular case, for a sample parameters like k, theta, and phi. And we can clearly see in the places where the quantum state is diverging, the velocity field is actually tending to zero. So actually, from a pilot wave perspective, this eigenstate is actually bound state. The configuration is never going to escape the potential. It is going to remain bounded. So this is somewhat surprising because from a quantum mechanics viewpoint, one would expect that these normalizable wave functions, they are unbounded. But if you define a distribution in, let's say, around the origin, it is always going to remain inside a particular region. So this is the velocity field for a particular eigenstate, and one can ask if this also holds if you superpose the energy, like different energy eigenstates. So what's the velocity field and how is this behavior? Does the bound state behavior still continue?
Interesting.
Yes.
Maybe I misunderstood what you said earlier. You just referred to eigenstates, but it seemed to me that you were saying earlier that if you relax the normalizability condition, that suddenly you lose discretization of energy, because you referred to, like, what if the energy is between these values? So am I right that once you relax normalizability, you no longer have discretization of energy? Is that
true? Yes, yes.
And then what do you mean then by eigenstates? Like, which?
So these are eigenstates corresponding to any continuous energy minus infinity to plus infinity. So if you take k is equal to 2n plus 1, you will get back the standard quantum mechanical eigenstates. And if you take k to be continuous, then you would get these eigenstates corresponding to a continuous energy eigenvalue.
Okay.
So if you raise, okay. So now we have the velocity field for a particular eigenstate, and then we can ask ourselves if such a behavior, a bound state behavior, is also obtained when we consider superpositions. So for that, I need an approximate form of the wave function at that asymptotic limit. And after some lengthy calculations, I found such a approximations where m is a parameter, approximating parameter. So in this same approximation, the velocity field turns out to go over as 1 by y squared at very large modulus y. So again, we are getting this bound state behavior, and I've plotted the velocity field for a sample superposition. You can see that the velocity field is going to zero at large mod y values. So further generalizing this result, one can ask if this holds true in multiple dimensions. So we can take,
Can I ask a question? The logic that it's sort of bound in that region, I mean, that's under the assumption that it started in that region. I could also say, if I imagine that the configuration started, you know, very far away, well, velocity is zero, so it's going to stay out of that region.
Yes, yes.
It's bounded out of that region. And in fact, like my usual intuitions would say, that psi squared tells me the likelihood, and it basically has infinitesimal likelihood of starting in that region if I use my normal intuitions about psi squared. So is it clear that the right way to interpret this is something bound in that region as opposed to something bound out of that region?
Yes. It's correct that if you start off from very far away, the particle is just going to stay put. But I think the correct interpretation would be in this way, because if you think physically, if there is a, let's say I have a harmonic oscillator in the lab, then I would expect the particles to be in this finite region, in the potential, not at very large distances. So if you consider the particles to start off from, let's say, a very far off region, then it is going to stay put.
Where does that expectation come from? Because in the normal Bohmian story, you know, either you say, well, the kind of configuration is sampled from psi squared, and so I expect it to be in the regions where psi squared is large. Or you say, well, you know, the original ensemble is whatever, and it equilibrates.
Yes.
So I don't see any reason you can give for saying it had to start in this region. Like, there's nothing about the experimental setup that tells me where the Bohmian configuration is.
It's fully contingent. So if you take the normal, like, parrot wave story with not the Bohmian one, but with the initial rho to be logically separate from the quantum state, then we can, for a normalizable quantum state, we can take an initial density which is very far away, and it would also, like, stay put. But we define the normalizable quantum states to be bound states. They're not like scattering states. It's because if you begin from this region, then it would never escape. Whereas if you have a quantum state of the form, let's say a momentum eigenstate. You can begin from this or near the origin, but it would like continuously go to infinity. Or let's say, if you consider, let's say, an airy wave packet where the velocity is continuously increasing with time. So you begin from the origin and it will like shoot off to infinity. So such behaviors do not occur for these quantum states, which is very similar behavior to the behavior that you get in for normalizable quantum states. So if we take, let's say, superpositions of the allowed energy eigenstates in quantum mechanics and do a pilot wave theory. So you would get that if you take a rho to be completely contingent of psi, you can begin for a rho which is support around the origin, it would never go out. If you take a rho which is very far from the origin, as you suggest, then it will never be able to enter or actually have any dynamics effectively. So the same situation is obtained here. So in that sense, that I refer to this as bound state. So we may think of it as a generalization of bound state because we are dealing with a situation where the normal definition of bound state as being normalizable is no longer applicable. But we are defining now the bound state in terms of how the velocity field is behaving.
So I think you've persuaded me that the problem that I've articulated isn't in any sense unique to your proposal involving non-normalizable wave functions, that it's sort of also a problem in the Valentini-style approach of non-equilibrium Bowie mechanics. I guess what I'm left wondering now is maybe it is an objection that needs to be met in both cases, that if we say that logically there's no reason that rho should have anything to do with psi squared, and then we also recognize that if I start with rows that are sufficiently different from psi squared, they won't equilibrate to psi squared. Mm-hmm. Then that seems to me like, oh, okay, maybe that's a problem.
So actually there is some work done previously considering the equilibration properties of densities that have supports in the tails of the wave function. Mm-hmm. And there are like some results that they've gotten. If the field has a certain property, I think a certain global vorticity in certain cases, there is a partial relaxation. In most cases, there is not. So there have been studies, and I'm not an expert on what mechanisms lead to relaxation. But this is a question that has been studied in the pilot wave literature. Yes, and one can make a further study of what happens if you begin at a very far off region in the configuration space for such wave functions as well. Maybe we would obtain similar results, maybe not. Whether that is considered a problem by the pilot wave community is not clear, because part of what drives workers in pilot wave is that maybe we can detect some difference between quantum mechanics and pilot wave theory. Maybe if the initial distribution is localized in a very far off region, we would not see equilibration, and maybe that may lead to an experimental prediction.
I mean, probably even in Daskos system mechanics, there are distributions that do not relax to equilibrium. Just they measure zero according to the Bayes measure. Right? So you would expect there to be some funny distributions, which don't.
But the concern here is that it's in fact the lion's share of the distributions that are behaving.
I don't know that it would be the lion's share. I mean,
well, like in this case, what set of distributions are localized around the origin compared to all the distributions that are not localized around the origin? There's way more distributions that are not localized around the origin to begin with.
So that would be a Bohmian kind of interpretation. Like that is not necessarily. So if you take like the viewpoint given by Bohm that rho and psi for an ensemble are completely logically separate,
yeah,
then we can never in fact like infer like where the lion's share of distribution would be just by looking at psi.
Okay. Question, so, according to what measure is it the lion's share of distributions?
Right? Yeah. If you took the prior over distributions rho, that was just, I don't know, like let's say you allow your distributions to be Gaussians and they say, okay, take a uniform distribution over all means for those Gaussians and all variances for those Gaussians.
Okay, because it's continuous, so there is no uniform distribution. This is not compact.
Sure.
So the usual thing is to take distribution where the lion's share. The usual thing in that case is to adopt a measure where the lion's share under the origin.
If I saw this in a big box.
It is arbitrary, but at the same time, you can't say the lion's share has to be near the origin. You can't say the lion's share has to be away.
So don't make it infinite. Make it compact with very large compared to the size of the box. Now the lion's share is not the box.
If it's compact, once we're in the compact situation, then we're no longer non-normalized. Like, to make this into a compact problem, you have to introduce infinite walls somewhere. Your potential, and then we're back into regular quantum mechanics.
But I'm still not persuaded that the natural priors make it likely that you'll start in a region where you're bound here. But why don't we let you continue, interject, talk about this later.
Yeah. Okay. So if you consider, for example, superpositions in multiple dimensions, so you have, let's say, a harmonic oscillator potential in the x, y, and z direction, and let's say there are multiple particles in the same potential, then we can represent a, in general, entangled wave function over all the particles, and capital N particles in this form. And the result that I get when I take the asymptotic limit for the velocity is that the radial velocity tends to zero. So in the configuration space, if you're moving in a particular direction, then along that direction, the velocity along that, it tends to zero. If you go sufficiently far in a different region, in a different direction, the velocity along that direction could go to zero if you keep going in that region. So for, let's say, two dimension, this can be, I've taken a particular sample superposition over y1 and y2. And the result you get is this. At the top left figure, you have the mod size square, and the blue region there is 10 to the power minus 15 times smaller than the region around the edges, and you have the velocity field represented in the top right. You can see that velocity field is, if you go, y1 is very large, modulus of y1 is very large, then it goes to zero, or y2 is very large, then it goes to zero. So if you start off around the origin, the particle is never going to like escape this big box. Yeah.
So, interject, you're talking about a particle with two Cartesian coordinates rather than one, like that's your y1 and y2.
Yes.
Your original wave function seemed like capital N wasn't just ranging over dimensions of space, but I thought
yes,
multi particle wave function.
Yeah, yeah. In general, it is. Yeah, because I cannot like show the graphs in multiple dimensions, so I've just focused on n is equal to 2.
Can I also interpret your y1 and y2 as, say, two particles confined to a line, y1 is the position of the first particle, y2 is the position of the second particle, and then this velocity field is somehow telling me that as soon as the first particle sort of moves towards the boundary, that kind of induces the second particle to reflect off its boundary, like it.
I think the velocity. I think you can interpret it in that way, like two particles, both in the x, in the same dimension, and both subject to the same harmonic potential. And okay, so let me see. So, if the velocity, let's say the first particle goes a very large distance, the modulus, the coordinate of that becomes very large, then the velocity of that particle will go to zero as a function of 1 by y square, regardless of where the other particle is. Whereas the second particle, y2, if the coordinate y2 becomes very large, then the velocity of the second particle will tend to zero, regardless of where the first particle is. So there is still this non-local influence of the first particle on the second particle on the first, if you consider an entangled wave function. But this asymptotic limit of the velocity is independent of that. So there will be constants multiplying, let's say, the giving you the non-local effect, but the dependence on the coordinate itself of the first particle on its coordinate would go over as 1 by y1 squared.
I guess I was thinking in particular of the velocity field you plotted, that if we're talking about a single particle in two dimensions, I sort of know how to interpret that as sort of the particle circulating.
Hmm.
But if it's two particles, then I guess it's this interaction between them where the kind of, you know, whether a given particle is sort of moving to the left, say like y1, whether it's moving to the left or to the right, kind of is correlated with what y2 is doing.
Yes. So if you look at, let's say, but these would be very small differences, because if you let's say you look at the top and the bottom of the figure,
mm-hmm.
then the directions, the velocity vectors are indeed changing along y1, but you see the velocities are already very close to zero with the blues. So they're very close to zero, so they're very small, and perhaps the direction is has a fine dependence on where the other particle is. So because this is an entangled wave function, so you would see this dependence. The velocity of the first particle would depend on the second particle, and so on. So that, I think that's what we are seeing in the plot. Okay. So, given this behavior of the velocity field for non-normalizable quantum states for harmonic oscillator, like one can ask a different kind of question. So, for the normalizable case, we know that there is a relaxation that occurs. There is an H theorem which can show analytically that there is an equilibrium density, and that is reached over time in certain number of cases. Now, once you have the non-normalizable case, does the density relax to something? Here, this is the question, Rob, that you were asking at the beginning. And here, so this question was actually studied by Valentini last year, and he came to the conclusion that if you look at the H function, which quantifies the relaxation of the initial distribution with respect to the Mott size square distribution, then there is no lower bound on that function for a non-normalizable quantum state. And therefore, there is no physical equilibrium state for such quantum states. But notice here that the conclusion really rests on the definition of the H function here. And I think that there is a different viewpoint that can be taken here. So I have defined a different notion of equilibrium here. So I call it pilot wave equilibrium. And I will motivate it by considering the H function that we originally use in pilot wave theory, HQ. And it is defined mathematically, it is just a relative entropy from rho to mod psi square. But you see, like this immediately lands us in trouble, because mod psi square is not a distribution anymore here on the configuration space. So this is not a well-defined relative entropy. So it's not surprising that we are getting not well-defined lower bound for this function. It's not a well-defined relative entropy. So I proposed that in this scenario, we should adopt a different H function, defined H pilot wave. And here, the rho pw is a candidate equilibrium density, and it is defined in this way. So let's consider a compact support of rho on the configuration space. So the configuration space and rho is localized in some region in the configuration space, then rho pw is basically the mod psi square renormalized over that region, and it is zero outside. So then rho pw is a valid distribution on the configuration space, so this is a candidate equilibrium density, and one can show that like this rho pw, if you make it, for example, so the time dependent H function would be this, and one can show that rho pw would evolve in this way. So as the rho, as rho is evolving, the support of rho is also evolving with time. And rho pw would basically be mod psi squared by n as a function of time over a different region. Now, I've also shown that actually this quantity nt, which is the normalization, it is independent of time. So one can prove that as the support of rho is evolving in time, the mod psi square on that support is independent. So what it physically means, one can visualize it in the following way. So suppose we have this quantum state, mod psi square is divergent, and you start from a region where mod psi square is very low. The initial rho is localized in a region where mod psi square is very low. And suppose the distribution evolves to go into a very high mod psi square region, then it will appropriately shrink so that the quantity n is constant with time. So as the support is evolving around the configuration space, it will shrink and expand as it moves and navigates around the different mod psi square region. So this feature that n is constant, it allows us to prove an edge theorem for the new edge function, hpw. And the basic result that we get for an edge theorem is basically this, that the coarse-grained edge function, it decreases with time. So this suggests that if you start with a distribution which is not in Paletti wave equilibrium, it is not equal to mod psi square renormalized on that region, then it will tend to attain that. And the assumption we need an assumption always for an edge theorem, and I've taken the new initial fine-grained structure. It is very similar to what we assume in classical statistical mechanics and also in the edge theorem for quantum equilibrium. So this suggests that there will be a relaxation to rho pw, which is very analogous to really how rho at a coarse grain level starts to approximate the mod psi square distribution for normalizable quantum states. So we can illustrate this with a figure. If psi is not normalizable, then there are many different possible densities which are in Paletti wave equilibrium corresponding to different compact supports on the configuration space. And there are other densities which are not in Paletti wave equilibrium. Now, this H function, once you have defined it, you can also apply it to a normalizable quantum state, the HPW. If you apply it to that, then the result you get is that there is still a range of distributions which satisfy the Paletti wave equilibrium condition, but there is one distribution which reproduces quantum mechanics. So that's the mod psi square distribution with the global support. So one may think of this as a generalization of the notion of equilibrium or equilibration in Paletti wave theory. We initially used to consider equilibration as where the density reproduces quantum mechanics at the end. But here you have a general class of distributions which satisfy the conditions we require for equilibrium. For example, if it is initially in equilibrium, it will stay in equilibrium with time. The distribution is equivariant and so on. But it does not satisfy the requirement that the distribution will reproduce quantum mechanics. Okay. So given this, like given all this structure that like Paletti wave theory has, one may ask like, okay, if you're not like specifically interested in like Paletti wave theory, like what are the implications of allowing all this extra structure? So let's look at the implications. And I'll start with non-relativistic quantum mechanics. So the straightforward question would be like, if these states are indeed allowed by Paletti wave theory, then why don't we observe these states in a lab? And I have this is something that I've not fully worked out, but I can present you the core argument that I have. So firstly, let's note that this potential, the harmonic oscillator potential, is not really realistic because it is diverging at infinity. Whereas any experimenter would have control only over a finite region. So if this space is our lab, then you will be controlling the potential in this room and not outside. So let's consider a realistic potential. It may look something like this. So here it's a harmonic oscillator potential, like depressed by a V0 amount, and then it goes up to zero. Okay. So in normal, like in quantum mechanics, outside in that region, outside the harmonic oscillator potential, if you consider an energy which is negative, then you will be having the wave function, the allowed wave functions are these. But pilot wave would allow also this kind of solution. So why don't we observe this in the lab, is the question. So consider the quantum state evolution written in terms of the propagator. Okay. So notice that if the potential is suffering a tiny bump, there is a tiny fluctuation in the potential at a very far distance from the region where you're controlling the potential. So that would affect the quantum state in your region. Now, the effect of this change, can be written in terms of, let's write it in terms of like change in the propagator, because the potential has changed. The effect of this would be arbitrarily large, because psi itself and an arbitrary large distance, it is getting up very, very, very large. So a very small change in the potential at a very far distance away can make an arbitrarily large change in the quantum state that you're observing. So it appears that like the answer to this question, why don't you observe these states in the lab, is that such states will be unstable. A very minor fluctuation in the potential very far away can affect the state. So there are two competing explanations for quantization. One is in quantum mechanics, you have that these are the only allowed states. We have the bond rule as an axiom. But if you suspend that, then these non-normalizable states are also allowed, but they will be extremely unstable systems. So if you have an electron in hydrogen atom, so let's consider a solution for that, which is not normalizable. So that electron would be affected immediately by a fluctuation in the potential, a different galaxy away. So it may just like shoot off and get out of the atom. So one may further explore if there is an experimental prediction to be had here. For example, one can consider a quantum state which is not normalizable, but it is going to zero at infinity. So such a state will not be unstable for pilot wave theory, at least for some class of potentials, or it may. So further work needs to be done to show that whether this these kind of wave functions also ruled out by instability. One further thing that I can mention here is that the quantum, so the pilot wave equilibrium, if a density is in pilot wave equilibrium, you still get signaling out of it. So in quantum equilibrium, you get no signaling once you relax to the quantum distribution. But once you reach pilot wave equilibrium, the density is technically in quantum non-equilibrium, although it is equivariant. So we'll get like signaling out of such systems. Okay. Now let's look at quantum field theory. So here we can consider non-normalizable states in the Fourier space. So this alleviates some of the problems that when we consider non-normalizable states in the position space. So we can consider, for example, a scalar field on flat spacetime, expanding spacetime. And if you consider a decoupled mode, then the wave function, the evolution of wave function can be represented in this form. And it is really a harmonic oscillator in the Fourier space. So the coordinates Q are defined in terms of the Fourier transform of the scalar field. So we assume here that the field itself has a Fourier transform. But notice that we did not assume the same thing about the quantum state, which is piloting the field. So it may be that it is not normalizable and so therefore has no Fourier transform. So it may not have a position space representation. In that case, if you consider such a solution for this, then one may have some implications in cosmology, where all the predictions that we have gotten for like quantum non-equilibrium in pilot wave theory applied to cosmological scenarios are based on the subset of psi, which are normalizable. But we can consider a non-normalizable solution, and that would give a different velocity field, and it would be interesting to look what happens there. Furthermore, even if you consider a normalizable solution, let's say the psi is normalizable in Fourier space, but we consider a compact support of the initial density, initial distribution. So in the usual story, cosmological story of how we attain like quantum equilibrium is that we have an initial density and it attains quantum equilibrium. But even before that, if we have a compact support of the initial density, then it can never reach quantum equilibrium because the factor n is constant. The normalization is constant. So it will never become global. So we need an initial non-unitary phase in a cosmological scenario, in the pilot wave story, to say that, hey, these arbitrary densities, they go through a non-unitary phase in which n is changing, and we are attaining approximately global support. And then there is the usual unitary evolution, which guarantees us quantum equilibrium. So without such a non-unitary phase in early cosmology, we would likely not be able to prove the attainment of quantum equilibrium for an arbitrary density. Another example that we can consider is the electromagnetic field. So the electromagnetic field can also be considered as a collection of harmonic oscillator over the Fourier space. And here we can consider an interesting experiment. So the electromagnetic field, when it interacts with, let's say, an atom, then if the field is normalizable, then we can show that there are discrete energy exchanges between the atom and the field. But if you consider, let's say, a non-normalizable solution of a field corresponding to a particular Fourier mode of the electromagnetic field, then what happens then? Is the energy exchange continuous? So there's a possibility that by studying this, maybe we may get an experimental prediction in this scenario. And lastly, there is also an implication for relativistic quantum mechanics. So the Klein-Gordon equation, we treat in modern quantum field theory as a field equation. The particle interpretation of this was abandoned because the current density, this is one of the big problems, but there are other problems as well. But one of the big problems is the current density that we get from Klein-Gordon is not positive definite. But if we adopt the same strategy that we have adopted here, that the quantum state is generating the evolution of the configuration, it is not generating the evolution of the probability density. So whether the quantum state is normalizable, whether the quantum state has a negative norm, or whether it has a negative current density, does not matter. So it is possible to pursue this, a particle interpretation of Klein-Gordon equation using this approach. Lastly, circling back to the question that we originally posed. So this work may give us a physical interpretation of generic solutions to relativity question, which are non-normalizable, in particular the Kodama state. Furthermore, it may also allow us, you know, to interpret states when we try to reformulate pilot wave theory in shape dynamics terms. So in this reformulation of pilot wave theory, where we eliminate the absolute structures of the absolute configuration space, the states that we obtain are generically non-normalizable. And workers have not been able to understand how to interpret these things. But we can adopt the same approach here and define a normalized density of configurations. Furthermore, I think there is some input that this work may have on the traditional approach to address non-normalizable states in quantum gravity, which is to redefine the inner product. So these inner products are usually defined in terms of just two quantum states. But the work suggests that it may be useful to also add the parameter of the compact support of which part of configuration space they're considering. Okay. Now, there are also some implications that we can discuss, which are of general, like foundational perspective. So one is that it has often been claimed that ballet wave theory is just a many worlds theory with a superfluous configuration attached. But here we can see clearly that the configuration is playing an important role. It is allowing us to interpret physically non-observable quantum states. This is not possible in many worlds interpretation, at least in the way that we have done here. Secondly, it is often the case that we can introduce some kind of retrocausal influence in ballet wave theory and alleviate some of the apparent problems. For example, we can make the configuration space quantum, the quantum state as epistemic by introducing some retrocausality. There are several models which achieve that. There is also the case that you can make the model local in a certain way, that at least all the interactions, so there is no space like direct space like influence from one particle to another. But retrocausality, if you introduce it here, like it is still not useful to eliminate non-normalizable states. Because if you have a pilot wave which is on three space, and that is guiding the evolution of the particle, so that's local, but even then, the pilot wave in three space can be non-normalizable. So introducing retrocausality is not really relevant. More generally, we see the appearance of epistemicity emerging from the underlying psiontic theory. So what I mean by this is, so the whole project is based on taking seriously that the quantum state is real, it is defining a physical field. But by the end of the process, when you reach the pilot wave equilibrium, then if you know the quantum state, then it tells you, it gives you knowledge about the configuration on the compact supple. So it gives you knowledge about where the configuration is. So it appears that some sort of epistemicity is emerging at the end of the process. And lastly, I think the work suggests us to consider the normalizability condition and rethink it in psiontic models in general. Because if the quantum state is real and it is a hidden variable, whether it is a physical field or a different kind of object, that it is real and it is not attached, it is not directly related to probabilities, then why should it be normalizable? If the probabilities are really separate, if this is really a hidden variable, then why should it be normalizable? So I think there's a case for rethinking the status of the normalizability constraint for general psiontic models. Okay, thank you very much for your attention.
So I guess I'll share if I have some questions first from here and then I'll find.
You mentioned in your H2 where you had where it works as long as you have no fine graining.
Yeah.
It seems to me that that's not an assumption. It's not an either or assumption. It seems like you have, it seems like that's more of an approximation. Is it possible to really say you have absolutely no fine graining, or is this something that there's always a small amount? Like, how does that assumption? What does that assumption mean exactly?
So the fine graining. So basically, by coarse graining, what I mean here. Let me go back to the slide. Yeah. Okay. So what I do is like chop up the configuration space into small cells, and then define a coarse grained value over each cell, which is the average of the set quantity, let's say rho, on that cell. And then I'm assuming that at t is equal to zero, there is no the coarse grained rho and the fine grained rho are the same. So that is, the fine grained rho is not varying inside the cell. So that is what is being assumed here. And a similar assumption is made in the S theorem for quantum equilibrium. So the first condition, that rho is equal to the coarse grained version of it, is the same in quantum equilibrium. And we further assume in quantum equilibrium, its theorem, that the initial mod psi square is equal to the coarse grained version of it at t equal to zero. So it may not be possible to prove the S-theorem without this, without taking this. So if you allow for a fine-grained structure inside the cell, then I think because of some time reversibility arguments, you can prove that you can get a reduction of the entropy. So it may not necessarily increase all the time. So this is an asymmetric assumption, and it has been somewhat controversial in literature, the status of this.
Were you saying there's a similar assumption even in the non-Dubreuil bound case? That's what you're saying.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I had a question about the situation where you talked about pilot wave equilibrium. You know, where you're reproducing psi squared. That's some compact support. I wonder if that notion kind of already exists in the literature on Bowman mechanics and pilot wave theory. When we talk about effective wave functions. So when we talk about situations where I've learned the outcome of a measurement, and so now I describe the collapse of the wave function. Now in Bowman mechanics, the wave function never really collapses. But instead, I say, well, the only part of the wave function that now matters for guiding the configuration, now that I know about this outcome, is this part of the wave function. And so I basically use that from now on. And I mean, if there's enough decoherence, then I make no mistake. If things recohere, well, then I have to remember that part of the wave function I've forgotten. But that feels to be very similar in a way to what you're talking about with pilot wave equilibrium, where if the compact support just picks up one branch of the wave function. So maybe you've thought about this already.
So there is a similarity and there is a difference. The similarity that you mentioned, that you have one branch of the wave function and the rest are the empty branches. And if you look at non-normalizable wave functions, then in some way, if you consider the empty waves to be a problem, then it makes it more acute because you may have a probability distribution just in a compact support, and whereas the quantum state is defined and very large, maybe at the whole of the configuration space. However, there is a difference as well, because if there is no branching structure, if the wave function is not already divided into different wave packets due to decoherence, then we usually take the rho to be a global support. We don't usually consider compact supports in such cases. Take a superposition of eigenstates of the harmonic oscillator. And if you measure the energy, then you get these non-overlapping branches. But if you take it before the measurement, and then you're discussing the initial distribution, then people have not considered defining a relaxation in terms of the in terms of HPW. What has been discussed, however, is what if a probability distribution begins with a compact support and does it relax to quantum equilibrium? So there have been simulations done on such cases, and the conclusion that they get is that it fails to reach equilibrium. So it appears that having a global support or an approximately global support generally helps. Now, what is new here is that those distributions which have been rejected as, not rejected, but considered to have not equilibrated, they may have equilibrated actually to pilot wave equilibrium. So they may be just mod psi squared renormalized over that region. But formally, they would still be in quantum non-equilibrium.
The last thing you said feels to me actually like a parallel difference, that if I think about pilot wave theory's affect condition on the outcome of a measurement, it feels to me like from that moment onwards, I'm describing a distribution that is, got all its support in one branch of the wave function relative to the universal wave function, and so it's also not psi squared. I've eliminated, these other branches. I'm now saying I have no weight of my distribution in those branches. So
Yeah.
I think it's still parallel.
Yes, yes. There are like parallels. Yeah, definitely. But it is not exactly one-to-one is what I'm saying. There are similarities. Yeah. But it is not exactly one-to-one.
I have a couple more questions. There are many people who think that the use of continuous variables is, just an approximation to a reality which is fundamentally discrete. So it's certainly true that, whatever experiments we do, I don't need to assume an infinite dimensional Hilbert space to explain them. I could do lattice gauge theory. I can always discretize. Any differential equation can always be approximated by, a finite difference equation. So I can always assume that fundamentally physics is about discrete, finite dimensional systems coupling. And if that's my view, then I would say none of this is possible, right? Because, the wave functions will always be normalizable in that setting. Am I right about that? That this really requires those Hilbert spaces to be things like the square root of functions on some continuous variable.
So one can consider, each coordinate. If the Hilbert space is such, it's considered in such a fashion that each coordinate, x1, x2, x3, each of them are discrete. So they are, so you chop them up over the real number line, but they're still it's not finite. So it goes to minus infinity and plus infinity.
Right.
So in that case, I think we would still have non-normalizable wave functions that can be defined. And they would be approximately the ones that I have been discussing.
And if I say everything's discrete and furthermore finite dimensional, then the scope.
If there's really that, yes, definitely. Because then we can always normalize over that region. Yeah.
Does that trouble you?
No, no, it's not troubling. It's interesting. It may be that these wave functions are not physical taken from that perspective. So that gives you a different view of this. Now, if you take this perspective and work out the logical consequences, you arrive here. So it's a different set of ideas.
Well, let me put it a different way. So I don't see how to answer the following question. Maybe you do, which is, if we do regular quantum mechanics, then I say, well, I can always, no matter what you're describing, I can always approximate it very well using finite dimensional discrete variables, right? So I can discretize every differential equation and as I should always you tell me what precision I want, I should be able to achieve it. Now, it seems to me that in your foil to quantum theory, where you have these non-normalized wave functions, you have new predictions. And I say, okay, well, what does the discretized version of that theory look like? I guess it's somehow very different from the discretized version of normal quantum theory, but I guess I just don't see how you could get a discretized version out. And so now I'm sort of left wondering whether you really have a consistent foil theory on your hands. Shouldn't I be able to have a discretized version of this?
So in the discretized version, let's say you have just one dimension. There is a position of one particle, let's say.
Yeah.
And you consider wave functions for that particle. So is x discrete in your discretized version of it?
Yes.
Does it also extend from minus infinity to plus infinity?
No, it's finite.
Okay. So then I would say that the key role is not being played by discreteness, but by the finiteness of the set of x.
Then still my question is, as we call it, discretization and finitization. The question is, in the past, we've always found that we can do that. We can do computer simulations of any experiment, and there's never infinities in those simulations. They're always finite dimensional, discrete. So how would I come up with a computer simulation of your model? There's just no way of having finite intervals with discrete variables.
Well, that can be achieved, I think, because once you have the quantum state for the continuous case, then you can define it for the discrete subset that you have taken and use it to simulate the velocity field on this discrete lattice. And then use it to evolve a configuration. So that would be an effective way of, that would be an effective theory. So the real theory would actually have divergent like wave functions at infinity. Mm-hmm. But you can define like a finite set, you keep the velocity field to be the same over that. And that would, that would suffice as a numerical simulation for if you want to consider one.
But then when I look at that theory, where I sort of looked at this particular support, doesn't it then in that support become, equivalent to usual quantum theory? Because you proved in your talk that you're going to have a or any complex form.
Yeah. So it's not really going to be equivalent because the velocity fields you're considering would be different from the ones considered by quantum mechanics. So the velocity field on this discrete support may have a different behavior than the velocity fields that are considered by quantum mechanics.
Okay, so is it like whatever that wave function from your original non-normalized wave function was, on a compact support, I can now normalize it.
Mm-hmm.
And the velocity field doesn't depend on the norm of the mm-hmm. wave function. So isn't there going to be some valid wave function on that compact support?
So I might be misunderstanding, but I don't think so, because you can consider that wave function to be a continuous, corresponding to a continuous eigenvalue of the energy.
I see.
Whereas quantum mechanics would only restrict it to the discrete ones.
I see.
Well, those are supposed to form a basis for the Hilbert space.
I'm sorry?
Those discrete wave functions form a basis for the Hilbert space. Once we're restricted to compact support, we're going to have a separate Hilbert space, right? So you would therefore expect that any function in the Hilbert space can be written as a superposition of those.
Yes. But then you would lose I completely agree with you. In that case, one would lose the discrete energy, the quantization completely in that picture.
So I'm saying that you can write this. So this wave function came from the non-compact case and had an energy eigenstate. Of a continuous energy. Now we restrict it to compact support.
Mm.
What I'm saying is, well, now the wave function can be interpreted as a superposition of energy levels with discrete energy.
Yes, yes.
So it was an eigenstate, it will no longer be an eigenstate in this restriction.
Yes. Correct. That's correct. Yes. So one may think of it in this way, if you want to. So you can consider normalizable quantum states generating the same velocity field for the non-normalizable case, but the evolution of that normalizable quantum state has to be non-unitary.
Can you say again? The evolution of
the normalizable quantum state
has
to be non-unitary.
Ah.
So at one time, let's say we begin with a non-normalizable quantum state. You chop off the ends and you take compact support. You can express it in terms of superposition of eigenstates. Now, if you evolve it in time further, so it will not be the same as the normal as a non-normalizable quantum state. They are both the same at time t0, but they will evolve differently.
Yeah, because the actual non-normalizable state would leak at the edges, right?
Mm. Yeah.
So I'm not super familiar with a lot of what's going on in the whole pilot wave setting, but this discussion seems like a classic case of having two continuous parameters, one being sort of the boundedness scale or how compact or, approximation is, it's not about discreteness or finiteness, it's just about boundedness or unboundedness of your domain. And on one hand, you can recover like an unbounded description from a sort of limit of taking the bounds to infinity. At the same time, we're also interested in understanding how some sort of equilibrium emerges as time flows forward. And so these are clearly going to be coupled together in the sense that, sure, you could fix, what's happening here is, you carefully, in sort of an adiabatic way, increase your scale, increase your evolution towards equilibrium in the right way, then you can obtain this kind of compact approximation of non-equilibrium dynamics kind of thing. But there's sort of, there's an infinite number of limits you can take depending on, for any fixed bounds on your theory, the system's going to behave one way. But really, you're trying to approximate an unbounded system.
It's interesting that the at the end of the day, it's non-unitary evolution, because it suggests that this is one way that you could define a completely discrete and finite a theory for a completely discrete and finite system that was, again, an alternative to quantum theory. And it wouldn't be about the non-normalizability of the wave function anymore, because that's not possible. But it would be about a deviation from unitary evolution.
Yes.
So maybe like this could be an avenue to saying, here are some really natural deviations from unitary evolution, which were inspired by this continuous variable setting where things were non-normalizable, but now I can kick away that pattern. Say it has nothing to do with non-normalizability of the wave functions. Here's just an interesting proposal for some different kinds of dynamics.
Yeah, definitely. So one can actually work out like what terms you would get for the non-unitary, like non-Hermitian. And they're interesting. Like I've worked them out. So either you say that like, okay, you consider non-normalizable wave function evolving unitarily. Equivalently, you get the same velocity field by taking normalizable wave functions, but they have to evolve non-unitarily.
Yeah.
And the non-unitary, the non-Hermitian parts of the Hamiltonian, they are very interesting to look at. If you consider, for example, getting the Schrodinger equation out of a Klein-Gordon equation, then at different levels of, so you take the single order approximation, and they get the second order approximation. So some of the terms that you get from that approximation are actually corresponding to this non-unitary, this non-Hermitian Hamiltonian. So there may be a link over there as well.
I have another question. So I know even less than I do about the pilot wave stuff as I do about the quantum gravity and the Wheeler-DeWitt equations and the problems with the non-normalizability of the solutions. But you mentioned sort of like the sort of typical or standard or approach to this is to reconsider your notion of your inner product, right? When you say that, so I don't know what that means in that context, but is it the same idea of just like reconceptualizing the support over which you're integrating things? Or do they have some other radical idea about the sort of weighting of the inner product at infinity? Or is it really, you know, truncating over a compact support kind of thing? What is it?
Yeah, so it is definitely not truncating over a compact support. So what they consider, and I'm not an expert on this, but from whatever I've understood, is that they consider the quantum states to live on a physical Hilbert space, which is different from the Hilbert space that you get just out of the constraints. So that physical Hilbert space is supposed to have a different notion of inner product than the one that we use, than the standard inner product.
And by making that change, then you do have this finite norm.
So that has not been done. It may have been done. At least I'm not. So a closed form expression of that physical inner product for the Kodama state, for example, it appears to me that there's still a debate about it.
Okay.
So I referenced a recent article in the introduction of my talk where I tried to motivated from that perspective. So this is the second article is published in archive in December. So it's a very recent work, and they still have not gotten a closed form expression for the inner product. So
I see.
So there may be a different inner physical inner product someone else has proposed. I'm not sure of it, but it is. There are like conceptual and at least there are technical challenges in clearly defining such inner product.
Okay. Are there any further questions?